Sir.
I have two questions. The first question is, so there's consciousness.
We'll just take your first one.
Okay. First question then. So when you define consciousness in Buddhism, I'm guessing it's a different definition to consciousness in the English language.
I don't know if consciousness is defined in the English language. It probably is. What about the perception of an object by a subject? That would be a pretty good definition.
But it's not to do with awareness.
I think awareness, in the way I've been talking, certainly you can substitute the word awareness for consciousness. It simply means there is some kind of experience of something on behalf. I mean, you can posit on behalf of something, but that would be to posit a self. So in Buddhism, consciousness is defined as any experience coming in through any of the six senses. So in Buddhism, we have six senses. We have eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. Mind is conceived of as a sense, just simply because impressions arise in the mind, just in the same way that impressions arise in the eye, or through the eye. It's just seen like that because it's nice and simple.
Is consciousness, why it's somehow surely a kind of Western idea of consciousness is something in very much attached to the mind.
When you point to your mind, you're doing this. Yeah.
Yeah. But the point, it needn't be at all. I mean, it could be an imminent feeling to do with one's entire nervous system, one's the totality of one, and that's even drawing a border around oneself.
Yes.
So
yes.
Then you can spread it out to, you know, anything that ever comes into your orbit of awareness, if
yes.
you like.
Yes, that's
so
right.
So I'm not sure if
well, I think you're expressing very well.
In a way about not having that specifically mentalized thing that is the Western thing. But if one gets rid of that, then it doesn't seem to be a problem to me about consciousness.
Yeah.
It's an imminent, an imminent emanation, if you like.
Yeah, it's just part of the package, as it were. Experience, having experiences, is just part of being an embodied human being, and how it happens is quite mysterious. Obviously, it has something to do with the brain and the nervous system, as you say. But it can't be located. You can locate some of the phenomena of consciousness through, you know, in the brain. You can locate it, but that's obviously not the whole story.
No.
So I like the way you're approaching that. It's like not coming to conclusions too quickly about what is happening. I might miss questions around here because I'm facing the wrong way. Was there something over there? All right, we can have your second question.
It's into the meditation and the way that you structured it, or it's structured around what's on the table.
So yeah,
have
the thing on the table.
Five elements within the six. So, am I meant to deduce that consciousness kind of embodies everything else?
Well, this thing won't lie flat. Well, everything is an experience, isn't it? I think it's I don't want to get into philosophical questions about whether the tree exists when we're not actually looking at it. You know, but I think experience is basic, so it's more basic, you could say. So this thing, which represents the rest of our experience, sort of appears within the blue sky of awareness or consciousness. Yeah, I don't know what this little skull is doing at the top. It's obviously been added on as decoration, perhaps.
You dissolve the stupa in an upward direction.
Yeah.
Is that Is it sometimes dissolved in a downward direction?
Yeah.
Am I misremembering that?
No, you're not misremembering that.
Do you want to say anything about why you decided to do it that way?
Yeah, I do. Because that's the way it's supposed to happen at death. Traditionally, at death, the experiences of the earth, in other words, the solid experience of embodiment, dissolving into an experience of water. And the water, the experience of the watery parts of the body dissolving into heat. There's much more experience of heat. It's just a traditional thing. And Bhante's written, Sangharakshita has written a poem about this. And in this poem he describes the dissolution of the elements in that way. And he's quite happy for us to do it that way. Because I asked him about it specifically. But sometimes we also do the practice the other way. You can dissolve the space element into the air element, and the air element can dissolve into the, I don't think it's going to work, into the fire element. And the fire element, into the water element, and the water element into the earth element. And then the earth element dissolves into the blue sky. I was interested. I want to ask you a question. I want to know how you got on with the meditation. I know some people find it kind of really impossible to visualise. I sympathise with you. If you had a difficult time, I sympathise. But it does get better. Nobody's going to say anything?
It was difficult. I had to give some effort to visualize it, and I could not visualize it directly. I have some something, but it's not a visual visualization. So.
I tried to reassure you that it didn't have to be visual. But it's hard to, when you're doing something, a direct imagination practice, You if you've never done it before, you get into this thing of, well, how on earth do I imagine things? I mean, you imagine things all the time. You know, just listening to what I so involves the same sort of process, really. You know, and if I say imagine a pink elephant, you can do that, and it just happens, and that's how you should do it somehow. Just take that. And you can say, some people will have seen a visual image of a pink, actual pink elephant. Some people will see much more like the idea of it. It doesn't matter. It can be either, any and either of those. So, in a way, it's just working with the way that you imagine things, and that's fine. And it's very interesting, actually, how we form a kind of internal image of the world. It's very interesting. Anyway, what was your question?
The question was, it's kind of about pain, actually, was a way into the practice.
Mm.
I can't remember whether it was in the second sutra or the first one where Buddha talks about pain.
Well, in the Satipatthana Sutra, in the Sutra on Mindfulness, he talks about pleasure, pain, and neither pain nor pleasure. Most of our experience is neither.
So, you know, I can almost, well, sometimes in meditation, but also sometimes in life, sit with the, slow things down enough to see contact, reaction, consciousness of the reaction, or consciousness of the pain that's been formed.
Very good.
But then it seems the ego clean, there is no other option. And I know
there's no other option than ego clinging.
That's exactly what we're talking about. But it's like, you know, it is my pain that just comes in. And, it's a really bad question.
No, it's not. It's a really good question.
But, you know, there was no other option presented, I guess.
Is it? No, that is just how it feels. Mm. When someone's being horrible, really horrible to you, for example, you feel there's no other option. You get really, really pissed off. Mm. You feel there's no other option. And it's that difficult. It's that difficult.
That's.
But also, that's not the only thing. It's not just about succeeding every time. It's not about that. It's just about learning. Because you can't hope to drop ego clean. You can't do that. It doesn't work like that. You can't hope to do that. That was ridiculous arrogance to think you can just drop ego clean. But you can learn from it, and then it gets easy. There's more space. There's more space, and you do get a little bit less inclined to jump in. So the option presents itself more slowly, I think, over time, with practice. Yeah, I think this applies to every kind of ego investment. Yeah.
So I guess my question was, there's no sense in which that leads to the conclusion that my pain is somehow the same as other people's pain. So I think my misunderstanding was, and often this is where I go with some of the teachings, is where I'm like, are they saying that I should feel everyone else's pain? Like it's somehow an option to, you know, go outside of myself, whatever that means, in picking into someone else's consciousness and suddenly, I don't know, be their ego, you know what I mean? All these confusions come in. But that's not what...
No, I think that's not an option, really. I mean, sometimes you can sense somebody else's pain. That's different from having it. And you can empathise with somebody else's pain to the extent that it's painful to you as well. But that's your pain.
Yeah.
I think sometimes, you know, it's quite easy to learn about some really tragic thing and you think, oh, God, that was terrible. You know, you're so unhappy that that's happened. But that's your pain. Mm-hmm. You're not really having... You can't have somebody else's experience, by definition. Yeah.
I wonder if one way to look at it is that usually we assume there are three elements in every experience. There's, for example, I bang my knee. So there's the knee, and there's the awareness of pain, and there's me having that awareness of pain.
Mm.
But if you just say, there is, in my experience, there is a painful knee, and sometimes one can do that. You no longer have to bring in the me at all. There is just, as you were saying, there isn't the consciousness, there isn't the me without the object. So there is simply a consciousness and awareness of a painful knee. That is what is there.
Yeah.
And I might have a consciousness of another person in pain. It'd be a very different kind of awareness, of course, because it wouldn't be felt in this particular body, which I've got direct access to.
Yes.
But nevertheless, it's still pain.
Mm. You would experience it in your, you could experience it in your body, as it were. Somebody else, if you hear about somebody else's pain, you can feel real pain, and you feel it in your own sense, in your own system, as it were. Yeah, but you don't have to posit. I mean, from the point of view of language, I have to say in your own and words like that, but you don't really have to think in those terms. You can think of it as being more mysterious than that.
I don't know how relevant this question is, or your mind, Nelson, but how is the consciousness that you talk about different from that universal consciousness, which I think is quite a thing in Hinduism, it's Brahman or something?
I think we would say it is different. It's different because one exists and the other doesn't. I'm not sure about universal consciousness. I don't think there is a universal consciousness from Buddhist perspective. I mean, there's a lot of consciousness around. I mean, there's like 30 or so consciousnesses or experiences going on in this room. You know, but I wouldn't call those a collective consciousness. No, maybe there's a collective element in as much as we're all trying, well, as a majority of us are trying to focus on one thing. But then we're all going off as well. We're all going off into different thoughts. So I wouldn't say there's any real collective consciousness, no.
So is that not what the Buddha is saying in terms of rebirth as well?
How do you get to that?
Because maybe, I don't know, probably not the right way of thinking, but maybe a transfer of consciousness when there's a rebirth.
Well, that's a traditional idea, but there you have an individualized stream of consciousness, and that is transferred, as it were, to another situation, like another body, where that can continue. I mean, this is a whole area for discussion which I don't think we've got time to go into now, and which people find controversial. But there's an experience of an individualized consciousness now, right? We think of this as mine. It's just that when you look into that, no I is found. So it's just a bit mysterious. You know, you have this sensation of individuality, which has a certain truth to it, you know. This is not, as it were, your body that's sitting here. You know, it's mine, as it were. But this me doesn't, this owner, as it were, doesn't really have anything that can be found. There's a bit of a mystery. So when we use terms like I and mine, it's just a way to try to explain it. That's all. It doesn't actually have any final existence. So this, the whole business of individuality, that mystery, you can take that into that issue of rebirth. I don't know if we are reborn. I certainly don't want to talk about it now. It's one of those questions where people get very excited. Or whatever. We haven't got time.
Yes, but in terms of the universal consciousness idea, would you say that, you were also saying that, obviously, you know, consciousness isn't actually kind of limited. Right? So in that respect, consciousness isn't simply sort of locked away.
That's right, as well.
Yeah. In my body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can ask where is consciousness?
Yes. Yes.
Where is it? You know.
So it could be yeah. kind of out there as well as
what is the difference between out there and in here?
Yeah.
So if it's not mine,
yeah.
then it's surely everyone, like if it doesn't belong to me.
How do you get to that? How do you get to that? I can just because it isn't one. If you make this big distinction between oneself and then everybody else, but just because it isn't one of them, does it have to be the other one? I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, one view would imply that if there was something happening on the other side of the universe, there would be something. Well, potentially. This universal consciousness would pick up on it, whereas
no, I'm lost already.
Well, if there's a universal consciousness,
big if.
But that's not what your view implies. They're just thinking, okay, I know we don't want to talk philosophy, but if there's no one on the other side of the universe looking at it, then this unbounded consciousness isn't there. It might be unbounded, but it's not over the other side of the galaxy, is it?
If it is unbounded, sure, it's not bound by any idea. But these are all ideas that we're talking about. It's an idea of self, it's an idea of other, it's an idea of the other side of the universe.
I got quite a good sense of it in the very first session of the series, which Paramananda led. And he did a sort of stupa meditation, I think it remember, and it started with the earth, and he said, you know, there's the earth, and you know, you have the earth in your body, and so on. But
yeah.
Hey, there's also earth out there, and really, where's the boundary? It's quite hard to say.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
And then we went into the water, and we had the water in the body, and where's the boundary between the water and the rain and the water you drink? And you know, you sort of say, yeah, that makes huge sense. And then fire, and well, the fire, you get the fire from the sun, and where is the boundary between you and the external fire? And then, of course, and so it went on. And the space, and your space, and somebody else, and the space. The boundless. So, and then he said, and now what about consciousness? And that really hit me very hard. Because I suddenly thought, Christ, yeah, of course. You know, there's my consciousness, but where's the boundary, really?
Yeah.
And rather than, I don't sort of, not really saying that that's some kind of philosophical statement. It was an experiential statement.
I don't think that's not philosophical.
Real, but God, I see.
Yeah.
I really, for a moment, I mean, fleeting moment,
yeah.
And I suppose it was a dissolution of self. It was saying, well, I don't exist, really. I mean,
we don't exist in the way you assume. Yeah.
It was fleeting, but it was a tiny sense for me of that boundlessness of consciousness, which I found it very powerful. And I've been thinking a lot about it too.
Yeah, great. Yeah. I think
it's not a question.
No, I'm glad it wasn't a question. that is just it. I mean, these things, the boundaries we place on things are usually ideas. Yeah. They're not realities. They're ideas which often have a certain value, but they only describe. They are not the things themselves. When do we need to stop?
Pretty soon.
Pretty soon. He thinks about now. Okay, just one more question then from our man.
In meditation, if you ever achieve like a sense of samadhi, is that a sense of dissolution of consciousness?
Well, it could lead to that. It would depend on what you did in that state of samadhi. Yeah. I mean, the state of samadhi, you could actually latch onto that and say, this is me, this is the real me. Or you could use that state of samadhi or much, much more integrated consciousness to look into the experience that you're having to see if there is an identification possible here. So it can be either. And Very often the former, but it would be good if it was the latter. Okay, well, thank you very much. I enjoyed talking to you, and I hope it's been useful. I hope I've raised some good questions as well as some confusing ones.